The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
So last Saturday, we put out part one of a conversation with Mike Richman, the author that has written the book on George Allen called George Allen, A Football Life. Mike's been an author for a while. Mike has written several books about the Washington franchise, including the Redskins Encyclopedia and a book about Joe Gibbs. You can find all of his books, including his new book, and a signed copy of his new book is available at MikeRichmanJournalist.com. But we put out part one of the conversation that talked about George Allen's life leading up to the moment he arrived in Washington in 1971. So that's the part I'm putting out today. It is presented by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name, you'll get a free estimate, and you'll get access to their current deal, which is 0% interest for 5 years, plus buy two, get two free, so you're paying half price on the windows. 866-90-NATION and windownation.com. Window Nation, thank you for being the presenting sponsor of this podcast. So I'm going to pick up from where we left off a week ago. If you haven't listened to part one, it's available. You can just get it by going back to Saturday, November 4th, and looking at that show entitled George Allen, A Football Life. But this is part two of my conversation with Mike, and we picked up with George Allen arriving in Washington. So now we're at the 71 season. Allen is the head coach, general manager. He's built Redskin Park. He's gone after, you know, the future is now was, you know, sort of the motto of the day. And he goes and just starts acquiring players, using draft choices. What was, like, the first of the big offseason moves?
His very first acquisition is, I would say, not only his first major acquisition, but his first acquisition was Billy Kilmer. He got Billy Kilmer from the Saints.
Yep.
And Kilmer was signed as a backup to Sonny Jurgensen. And I talked to Bruce about this. George Allen, the whole time, thought Sonny Jurgensen was going to be a starting quarterback. So Kilmer was going to be a backup to Jurgensen. Now, Kilmer didn't like that at all. But Jurgensen was going to be the starter, and it so happened that Jurgensen injured his shoulder in a preseason game against the Dolphins in 71.
Yeah.
So that's when Kilmer was tapped as a starter. But Jurgensen the whole way was going to be the starter on that team, and Allen was very, very excited about that. I mean, to have a quarterback the caliber of Sonny Jurgensen, who even though I think he was 36 years old at the time, he was still in his prime.
Yeah.
As a great quarterback. So, but then it so happened he had a shoulder injury in the 71 preseason, and Kilmer came on and quarterbacked the team for most of that year. Sonny did play in a few games toward the end of the season, but he got injured again. So that was basically Kilmer's team throughout 71.
Right. So, you know, he also acquired a lot of players from the Rams, several players from the Rams.
The Ramskins.
And that was led by, you know, Jack Pardee, right?
Pardee, Patios, Dyron Talbert, Jeff George, Jeff this special teams player. He was one of them. I think
Tommy Mason.
Tommy Mason.
Galler. What about Pettibone?
Pettibone came on later. He wasn't part of the initial acquisition package.
But he was on that 71 team.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
He came on in the spring. He was a Ramskin, definitely. But he wasn't part of that initial group of Rams players that came over. But yes, Pettibone was on that 71 team. In fact, he had three interceptions in the
first game.
Opening win over the Cardinals that year.
Right. So that year, I mean, it starts off on fire. You already mentioned week three against the Cowboys. They went 5-0. Their defense was dominant, right? I mean, do you think he was surprised by the early results? Or, you know, was it expected? Like, here's what I don't know. What was expected from his first team in Washington before the year started?
Well, when Sonny went down, he predicted a winning season, but he tempered expectations after Sonny went down. He was predicting like an 8-6 record,
yeah,
the 14-game season back then. He was saying 8-6, you know, we'll be happy with that. So you could say there was a bit of a surprise on his part. Now, about that, the start of that 71 season, the NFL scheduled the Redskins to play their first three games against NFC East opponents on the road.
Uh-huh.
Allen thought, and this is Bruce told me this, they thought that was a conspiracy on the part of Pete Rozelle and Tex Schramm, because those two knew each other and they were close from back in their days with the Los Angeles Rams in the 70s. Rozelle was the PR director for the Rams. Schramm was he was an executive. He was in the front office, so they knew each other from back in their days with the Rams in the 50s. So when fast forward to 71, Schramm was in the Cowboys front office, and Rozelle was the NFL commissioner. So George Allen thought that was an agreement on the part of Schramm and Rozelle to schedule those first three games on the road against NFC's opponents. It so happened they won those three games. They won their first five games that year, as you alluded to. And what really hurt them, though, in the next game, the following week,
Kansas
against
City,
the Chiefs, which was their first loss, they lost Charlie Taylor to injury that year.
Yeah.
He was having a phenomenal season.
Yeah, that game's actually available on YouTube. Like it's the NFL Films version, not the actual game. The Rams game that year, you can actually watch it as it was called by the Monday Night Crew. But that Chiefs game, what's interesting to me is that was a big game, you know, in the NFL season at that point, because those were the Hank Stram Chiefs, the Len Dawson, Otis Taylor, all of their Hall of Famers on defense. And Washington went out there, and like you said, they were up in the game, and Charlie Taylor broke his leg. I think it was on a touchdown catch.
The person that made the tackle, the player that made the tackle, was Emmett Thomas.
Emmett Thomas, wow.
Who was later an assistant on the Redskins at the same time Charlie Taylor was an assistant. So, Emmett Thomas tackled Charlie Taylor at the time he was lunging into the end zone on a touchdown reception. They lost Charlie Taylor for the season. That really set them back. Allen acquired a receiver named Clifton McNeil, who was a decent receiver. He got him from the Giants, but he wasn't a Charlie Taylor. But Roy Jefferson really stepped up. That was one of Allen's offseason acquisitions, veteran players. He stepped up. He had a great year in 71. He caught two touchdown passes in that Monday night win over the Rams, the George Allen Bowl, the game that you referred to just before, which was Allen's return to Los Angeles, that Monday night game. So, but they didn't have enough offensive firepower. I mean, the offense was really, really struggling for a large stretch in that season. But they finished 9-4-1 in 71 and went to the first round of the playoffs, losing to the 49ers.
Yeah, they lost to the 49ers.
Which of course was the
Interestingly, Steve Spurrier was the punter for the 49ers that day. But the Rams game that year, for those that don't know anything about that first team, so he is now in his first year in Washington, and there's a Monday night football game in the second year of Monday night football scheduled for late in the season in the Coliseum against the Rams. So it's George Allen back in the Coliseum, and the game was essentially for a playoff berth for Washington. And they went in there and they won the game. And by the way, had the biggest offensive output, I think, of the year. Because you said they were struggling on offense, but they won that game 38-24.
That is correct. Well, one of the touchdowns came on Speedy Duncan's interception return.
Okay.
But they played well enough offensively in that game in the first half to really hold on to it. And they held on to the lead late. The Rams made a run toward the end of the game. But that was that was arguably George Allen's greatest regular season victory. It was a revenge game for him.
Right.
He wanted to get back at the Rams for those two firings. Now, Dan Reeves actually had passed away several months prior, so he wasn't at the game, but there were still Rams front office executives who were part of that Rams team. He wanted to gain revenge, and he certainly did. I mean, that 38-24 win was big. And back in those days, as you know, Monday Night Football was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, right. I mean, you would have those games penciled on your calendar, who was playing on Monday night. Because, I mean, everybody would be, gathering around the TV sets in your family room watching it back then. So Monday Night Football, they were only in their third season. And, the team of Howard Cosell and Gifford and Don Meredith, I mean, they made it special, too.
Have you seen that game? So, it's available on YouTube, just as it was called.
I have seen it, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I have seen it, yes.
It's pretty cool.
And I remember it absolutely is. I remember one play. I remember a lot of that game, but one play distinctly sticks out because it was that touchdown run by Larry Brown at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
Charlie Haraway, the blocking back, I'm sure you've seen this, he threw this crunching block.
Right.
That set Brown free to score. It was a 4th-and-1 play. They tried 4 straight runs with Brown to get him into the end zone. They got in on the 4th try. Charlie Haraway, who was a great blocking back and was really a decent runner too,
right,
as the fullback, he threw one of the greatest blocks I've ever seen. And I also mention this because a few months later, my father owned a men's clothing store in Rockville, and as a promo, we had Charlie Haraway there signing autographs. So, because one of my father's customers was Brig Owens, and so he got Haraway to show up for that promo. Yeah, that's a memory that's never going to go away.
So they go to the playoffs. They've got the 49ers. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the game where Richard Nixon suggests the reverse play and draws it up, and Allen actually called it during the game, and it did not work out well. Am I right about that or not?
That is correct. Jefferson was dropped for about a 10-yard loss, it was an end around or reverse or however you want to call it. I explained that play fully in the book. I really did a deep dive. That play was initially Allen's idea. From its genesis, it was Allen's idea. He fed that play to Nixon at the time that Nixon came to Redskins Park. And Nixon came to Redskins Park around Thanksgiving of that season. The Redskins were struggling. I think they had gone winless in 3 straight games. It was 2 losses and a tie. And so Nixon called George Allen and said, "Hey, I'd like to come out and give a pep talk to the team." And, being friends with George Allen, as we've talked about earlier, Allen said, "Sure, we'd love to have you." So Nixon came to Redskins Park and gave the team a pep talk at that time. So to make Nixon look like he was really astute as a football mind, and he was anyway, Allen fed him that play. And it's one of the plays that Nixon called in the practices that day. He also called like a screen pass to Haraway.
Uh-huh.
But that play later, in the ensuing weeks, Nixon called George Allen, and he also spoke to Billy Kilmer about this. And he said, I'd like you to run that play if you make the playoffs. So, sure enough, that play was called. Now, I don't think that was actually George Allen who called the play. I think that play was sent in from the sidelines by Ted Marchibroda,
right,
who was the offensive coordinator at the time. And I wrote about this.
Yeah.
But why they called that play at that very time is really a mystery in itself.
Why? What was the time?
It's like a first and 10. They were on about the 49ers' 12-yard line. So why call that type of play when you're so close to the goal line? And also, George Allen being such a conservative-minded coach,
right,
I'm sure his staff, was in lockstep with that. Why call that play at that particular time? So Cedric Hardman, the 49ers defensive end, dropped Jefferson for a major loss. And then to add insult to injury, the snap was low on the field goal attempt.
And so Kurt Knight missed the field goal.
Yeah. So they went into the halftime with no points on that possession. They were still up 10-3, but it was a major downer, and the 49ers came back in the second half and won that game.
Yeah.
That's the whole story behind that play. So,
interesting.
The story, did Nixon really call the play? Well, he didn't phone it in from the Oval Office or anything like that.
Yeah. By the way, in 71, those that are familiar with sort of uniforms, it was the second year of the helmet with the R on it, which was the Lombardi design, right? Because he wanted it to be, somewhat similar to the Packers helmet. And then George Allen decided to change the helmet. Do I have that right?
George Allen was instrumental in the change. There was a Native American who was very fond of George Allen. He actually followed the Redskins. It was Walter Blackie Wetzel.
Right.
He had been president of the National Congress of American Indians. So he was very familiar with D.C. I'm sure he came here a lot. So he knew the team, and he approached George Allen before the 1972 season. He said, listen, I don't like the R on the helmet. Let's do something different. So Allen said, well, what would you like? Give me an idea. Come back with something. So they came up with a composite of the helmet logo that was later used on the helmets, was implanted on the helmets, and that existed for nearly a half century. But that's how that whole story came about. It was originally the Native American, Walter Blackie Wetzel, who approached Allen about it, and then Allen concurred. And then they had the helmet logo that existed for nearly 50 years. I also want to say that George Allen, he had his own affinity for Native Americans. I mean, dating back to when he's with the Chicago Bears, I mean, he started his own athletic fund for Native Americans on a particular reservation, the Oglala Lakota Sioux tribe in South Dakota. It was called the Red Cloud Athletic Fund. So he, it was close to his heart,
yeah,
the fate of American Indians. So when Wetzel approached him, I'm sure, thoughts went through Allen's mind that, hey, this is right up my alley. This is something I'd really like to do.
All right. So 72 is the second year. So he takes him to the playoffs, loses to the 49ers. 72 turns out to be the year that, they won the division. They went to the Super Bowl, lost to the Dolphins famously in Super Bowl VII after beating the Cowboys in the NFC title game on New Year's Eve 1972. But Kilmer's the starting quarterback at the beginning of that season. They opened that year on Monday Night Football in Minnesota against the Vikings. So why wasn't Sonny the starter?
Allen gave them both opportunities in the preseason. I think Kilmer was going to be the starter all along, even though their numbers were very comparable in the preseason. Kilmer started the first half of the six preseason games. By the way, they played the six exhibition games back then. Sonny
right.
played the second half. They both had really, really good statistics. But when all was said and done, Allen, he favored Kilmer at the time. I mean, Kilmer had I quoted him as saying in the book that, Billy Kilmer led us through most of the 1971 season. I want to stick with him. So he started Kilmer entering the 72 season.
Right.
They beat the Vikings.
Yeah, they beat the Vikings, but they lost that very controversial game to New England, which was a big upset at the time. And was it after that game that he decided to go with Sonny?
Exactly, yes. They won the second game of the year against the Cardinals, and then they were 2-0 heading into that Patriots game. They lost to the Patriots. That was very, very controversial.
Right.
I mean, if instant replay had existed, then
they would have won the game.
I think the Redskins would have had two more touchdowns. First of all, Roy Jefferson caught a pass. He clearly had both feet in bounds. Okay? That pass was ruled incomplete. Then, toward the end of the game, in what is probably the most controversial
safety punt in NFL history,
you know about Malinchak recovered. It looked like he was in the end zone when he recovered the ball. But then he slid out the back of the end zone. They ruled out a safety.
Right.
So, in the end, the Redskins lost that game 24-23. So, if instant replay had existed back then, they would have had at least one more touchdown and would have won that game. But, then he tapped Sonny after that game. He just was getting, a lot of heat. People were saying, Kilmer didn't have the greatest stats in that loss to the Patriots. He threw several interceptions. So, there was a lot of rumbling going on that, hey, it's time for Sonny to start. It was coming from the fans. It was coming from the media. So, sure enough, Allen tapped Sonny to start heading into the third week of that season.
And they went on a run, and, I mean, eventually he tore his Achilles in Yankee Stadium against the Giants. But he was the starting quarterback for the first, for a huge Cowboys game early in that season at RFK.
Right. Well, that was a huge win. Yeah, they beat the Cowboys 24-20 at RFK Stadium that day.
Yeah.
And, in fact, Nixon and Allen spoke after the game. Allen talked, we talked about how the stands at RFK Stadium would shake. We talked about that all the time during the Joe Gibbs era.
Right.
But that was actually true during the George Allen era, too.
Right.
And that was something that Allen relayed to Nixon in that phone conversation, which, interestingly, is part of the Watergate tapes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I knew that Allen was on some of those Watergate tapes. I mean, I'm wondering, coaching in the Coliseum in front of an L.A. kind of laid-back crowd, did he love sort of how raucous and how, incredibly electric the environment was at RFK? Because it had to be completely different than the Coliseum.
Oh, well, it was like night and day. And I'm glad you referred to the way the Coliseum was in L.A., because this goes back to one of your previous questions about, Allen being a star in L.A. They didn't sell out those games at the Coliseum.
Right.
Even though Allen was such a, he was winning, he had this great winning records year after year, they weren't selling out those games. And this, of course, a factor in that, too, is what we touched on before. There were other pro teams in the city at the time, and there were other great college teams. So, but yeah, when he got to D.C., the Redskins were the only show in town. Basically, the Senators moved right at that very time
right.
when the 71 season started, and there was the Bullets weren't there at the time, and hockey hadn't started yet.
No, Maryland basketball, by far and away, was the number two story in town.
Yes, it was. I actually wrote about that. I wrote about Lefty, saying that, hey, we're going to be the UCLA of the East.
Right.
But Maryland basketball, right, they were the number two sports story in town at the time.
Yeah.
But there were no other pro teams that were competing with the Redskins for fan interest.
Right. None. I mean, the Bullets showed up in 73, and that was 2 years after Allen got here. So back to the 72 season. They go 11-3. Larry Brown's the offensive player of the year. Their defense is lights out. They play the Packers Christmas Eve, 1972. George Allen's never won a playoff game. This is not the Lombardi Packers, okay, everybody. This is the Dan Devine Packers. I think was the coach at the time. Tell me about the defense that he employed against the Packers. Wasn't that the game that they had a 5-man defensive front to stop John Brockington, who was the running back?
Right. Brockington and MacArthur Lane.
And MacArthur
the Packers
Lane.
had a really good backfield in those two guys. I mean, it was like a 70s version of the Bull Elephant backfield. But they had, their quarterback was really bad. Scott Hunter,
yeah,
was the quarterback at the time. He was like mediocre, if not worse. He was just a bad quarterback. So Allen, he smelled dominance on the defensive line. So he packed it in. On the line, he had five guys rushing the quarterback, and they certainly took advantage of the quarterback. And but not only that, I mean, they shut down Lane and Brockington. I mean, the Packers did virtually nothing on offense that game. And the Redskins, they won 16-3, but they basically dominated that game.
Yeah.
Kilmer had a gorgeous touchdown pass to Roy Jefferson. Kurt Knight kicked 3 field goals. They also got a very nice kickoff return after the Packers took their 3-0 lead. They got a nice kickoff return from a player named Herb Mulkey.
Yeah, of course.
Allen had these free agent tryout camps. You know, anybody off the street could come.
Yep.
And try out. So he had this tryout camp. I believe he found Mulkey at one of those camps at Georgetown University. And it was an off-season tryout camp. Mulkey had played a semi-pro ball in the Atlanta area. And then they saw his speed in camp, which back then I think he ran like a 4.4, 4.5, 40, which back for those days was pretty fast.
Right.
Maybe even been a little faster, maybe 4.3. So they signed him, and sure enough, he produced. I mean, not only that kickoff return, but late in the 72 season, he had a great game offensively and on special teams in a loss to the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas.
Didn't,
he had like more than like two.
Didn't he that
like 200,
year
280 yards of total? What?
Didn't he make his name though in the preseason in the first ever game at Buffalo's, in new stadium in Orchard Park? Didn't he return the opening kickoff for a touchdown that was the first play ever at that stadium, which, by the way, still exists today? Wasn't that how he made the team, or am I thinking of something else?
I am going to plead ignorance on that.
Okay.
You may be very right about that, but I'm not certain of that. I think in terms of regular season, when he first came on the scene was in that game against the Cowboys in the next to last game of the 72 season. He had like 280 yards of total production on offense and special teams, you know, monster kick returns, and he was rushing the ball, catching passes. So that's when he first made a name for himself, when he first caught the coach's eye.
He wasn't going to supplant Larry Brown as the lead running back, for sure. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll get to the most significant game, I'm pretty sure, in the George Allen tenure in D.C. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Cowboys NFC title game, New Year's Eve, 1972. This is the rivalry. I know that, you know, the game in 71 when they won in the Cotton Bowl and they came back and everybody was thrilled. And when did Allen really start to pump up the rivalry with the Cowboys?
On the intensity meter, it went up a few, like, it skyrocketed when he came to Washington in 1971. He just, first of all, he had an antipathy for the Cowboys going back to the days when they played them in the 60s.
Yep.
And also, they scrimmaged the Cowboys. When he coached the Rams, they scrimmaged the Cowboys in Thousand Oaks, California. But he still, back in those days, he thought they got favoritism from the league. But then, when they were in the same division, when he came to Washington in 71, I mean, he just intensified the rivalry several fold. Yeah, he just had this dislike for the Cowboys and their front office and their corporate image, which even they had back then. I mean, they weren't known as America's team yet.
Right.
But Tom Landry had given them that type of personality as a team. You know, with the flex defense and that the formation lining up on offense.
Where the linemen would go up and then down. Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah.
Right. They had this a very cerebral image, and just Allen didn't like that. You know, he was like, this rah-rah guy, this rah-rah coach, three cheers for the Redskins. And so he was the exact opposite of Tom Landry. And, all these factors played into the rivalry. And, at the end, Allen beat Landry more times than any other coach. He beat him 10 times in head-to-head competition. Allen had a 10-10 record against him by the end of his career.
Including Los Angeles. Yeah.
His three top coaching rivals were Landry, in this order, but Landry, Shula, and Lombardi. And Shula was his primary rival when he was in L.A. He only played him one time. He played him twice when he was in D.C. Played him in the Super Bowl and then in a 74 regular season game.
I'm trying to think. I think he was 500 against them here.
Against
the Cowboys?
I think you're correct, yes. The record in D.C.
Well, it couldn't have been 500 because they would have played 71-77, so 14 and then 15 times. So it was, including the NFC Championship game. Whatever, it's not important.
It was close to it. I think the Cowboys may have had an edge record-wise when Allen was in D.C., but overall, through the years, he had a 10-10 record against Landry.
Does everybody in Allen's life say that the win over the Cowboys in the NFC Championship game is his greatest win?
Oh, that was his crowning moment as a coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't deny that. That was their Super Bowl win, basically. They beating the Cowboys that day with everything going into the game. The two teams were trading accusations in the days leading up to the game. I mean, Dyron Talbert, who was Allen's right-hand man for getting under the Cowboys' skin, I mean, he was saying stuff. He was saying, Roger Staubach, he can't read defenses. Roger Staubach wears skirts.
Yeah, right.
So, they were throwing that stuff around. And back in those days, I mean, they didn't care if it got into the papers, to rile the other team up. So, there was a tremendous hatred both teams had for each other. They thought there was dirty play on both sides. So that win over the Cowboys was Allen's biggest win as a head coach in the NFL. I mean, you could say that if they had beaten the Dolphins, that would have been his biggest win. But as you know, they came up short in that game.
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many stories told about that game. Net it out for me. Were they burnt out, after 2 weeks and after, nightly curfews and everything? A lot of those players over the years have said, it wasn't exactly fun when they got to the game.
And that's exactly right. I mean, even the first week when they were practicing at Redskins Park, he practiced it. He went really hard with them. I mean, it was like, his regular practices that week. And even when they got to Los Angeles, he was putting them through some really rigorous practices. So by the time of the opening kickoff, they were burned out at the time. I mean, Terry Hermeling told me that. Brig Owens told me that. When all is said and done, I mean, the Redskins were not far away from winning that game. I mean, they had a chance. They had a final possession. They were down 14-7. If they had been able to put together a drive at the end, I mean, I think there was more than a minute left when they had possession. I think they were out of timeouts.
Yeah.
Well, and they weren't able to muster a drive. But
The touchdown pass, it would have been a touchdown pass to Jerry Smith, hit the crossbar on one of those drives.
And the goalposts at the time were on the goal line.
Yeah, exactly.
So if the goalposts, I mean, if it had been like today, that pass, I mean, that would not have happened. That would have been a touchdown. There were other strange plays in that game. Kilmer had a touchdown pass to Charlie Taylor. Taylor was wide open at the goal line. This was in the second half. Taylor tripped at the goal line.
Yeah.
As he was lunging for that pass. So, it was just, I mean, they had a lot of bad luck that day. And, I mean, there was also a touchdown that the Dolphins scored that was called back. It was like a, you know, Greasy threw like a 50-yard pass to Paul Warfield that was called back. So I don't think the Dolphins played their best game. But I don't think that, I mean, I don't think that 17-0 Dolphins team, would you say, despite their record, that they were on par with one of the greatest NFL teams of all time?
No, no. I mean, in fact, a lot of the rankings of the all-time great teams and Super Bowl winners, the 72 Dolphins are rarely at the top of that list.
I certainly would not put them in that category either. I mean, they nearly lost their first-round playoff game to the, or I think it was their AFC Championship game to the Steelers.
Well, yeah,
so they were behind at halftime.
They had to play it on the road because of what you said earlier. It was not based on record. It was based on rotating, you know, sort of divisional venues, and Pittsburgh, as the team that had a worse record, hosted that AFC title game. By the way, thank God the NFC East. Well, the Cowboys were a wild card team. Actually, I don't know the answer to this. The Cowboys beat the 49ers in an upset in the divisional round, which is why they came as the wild card team to RFK for the NFC Championship game. If the 49ers had won that, do you have any idea where the NFC Championship game would have been?
I do not know. That's a very good question. I do not.
Because it was not based on record back then. It was rotating, you know, divisions that, you know.
Yeah.
I wonder if, I mean, that would have been.
I wish I had an answer.
Can you imagine if they had to go back to San Francisco for the NFC Championship game? Well, it all worked out. Moving forward through the rest of Allen's time here, is there? Do you know if there's a loss other than the Super Bowl that really that was really painful for him? Because to me, there's one game in particular that cost them a playoff spot, and I wonder if there's, you know, a loss that he, you know, really burned over.
Oh, absolutely. It was the Clint Longley game. That the Allen family will never forget that game. They'll never live that game down. I mean, you had a rookie quarterback come in. He had no experience playing in the NFL. He comes in, and as you probably know, I mean, defenses, they had no tape on him. They hadn't scouted him at all. So the Redskins defense wasn't prepared for him. He lit it up. I mean, he threw a touchdown pass to Billy Joe Dupree. He threw that game-ending touchdown pass to Drew Pearson. And the Cowboys won that game 24-23. That game will go down as George Allen's greatest regular season loss. Or it is down as George Allen's greatest regular season loss. I mean, that was a hard loss to swallow. And as Charlie Taylor told me in an interview, I mean, when they were up in that game, and they had like a 2-touchdown lead at one point. They could literally smell the turkey.
Losing that game
was just really, really, really hard to swallow for George Allen. But that is, as far as a regular season loss, that was really, really painful.
You know, what's interesting about that loss is it cost them ultimately the best record in the NFC, and they ended up being a wild card team, and they had to go to the Coliseum to face the Rams in the postseason. They had beaten the Rams in the regular season that year at the end of the year to clinch a playoff spot, just like he had done in 71. And then they lost to the Rams in what would turn out to be Sonny Jurgensen's final game. He came in and did not perform very well in his final game. But what I was thinking of was the game the following season that cost him a playoff berth, which was the Mel Gray catch game in St. Louis, because that they didn't go to the playoffs in 75. They didn't go in 77 either, his final year. But the Mel Gray, you know, no catch, which was ruled a catch, cost him a playoff berth that year.
Well, right in the end, you're right. It's a major reason they didn't make the playoffs. That loss in itself didn't knock them out of the
no,
playoff.
No. Wasn't the last game of the year, right?
Right. But even by today's standards, that would not have been a catch.
Yeah.
I mean, that ball was knocked out of Mel Gray before his feet even hit the turf.
It wasn't even close, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was not a catch. And for the officials to even confer after that play and decide whether it was a catch or not, I mean, that was ridiculous. That was another play that if instant replay had existed at the time.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that would have easily been overturned. There were several bad calls that went against the Redskins during that. They had a bad loss to the Raiders in overtime.
Yeah.
That very season, there were several bad calls.
It was the next game or maybe two games later, something like that.
Right. There was a really bad stretch. They had several, those two overtime games, the Cardinals and the Raiders, and there was a third overtime game that they played in. Oh, they beat the
Cowboys.
They beat the Cowboys in overtime
that
year.
Yeah, that was their first overtime game. It was the second year of the overtime rule, but in 74, they didn't play an overtime game. In 75, they played three of them in the second year.
Right.
And they beat the Cowboys on the Kilmer sneak after the Houston interception in overtime. And then, they lost to the Cardinals on the Mel Gray catch that tied it. And then, like you said, the Raiders with Stabler and that whole great Raiders team came to RFK and won in overtime. And
that was a mighty team, yeah.
Oh yeah,
I think Blanda kicked the overtime.
Yeah, I think the 75 team was an excellent team and actually one of the better offensive teams of the Allen era. But they just had those close, controversial losses that kept them from the postseason. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, we will move forward towards how it all came to an end for George Allen in D.C. We'll get to that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
So let's fast forward to the end, 77. They actually played really well down the stretch. They would have been a real, son of a you-know-what to beat had they made the postseason. I'll never forget it. It was Jack Pardee's Chicago Bears in like an ice storm that ended up winning a game to get to the postseason against the Giants in the Meadowlands. If the Giants had won the game, Washington would have gone to the postseason, and I think they would have been a tough out. But that was it. How did it come to an end?
During that 77 season, Edward Bennett Williams offered Allen a contract extension. And this was prior to the 77. But Allen never signed the extension. So months dragged on. The season comes to an end. They start some real serious talks again. Allen wanted the stock option in the contract, the stock option that we referred to earlier.
Right.
He wanted that in the contract. Williams refused to do that. Also, Williams, in that four-year extension, was going to pull some of Allen's responsibility. I don't think Allen would any longer be the general manager on that team. Williams did not want him to have that authority anymore. Okay? Now, while all of this was happening, Chuck Knox left the Rams in L.A. He got the Buffalo Bills job. And he wasn't fired. He just walked out. I don't think Carol Rosenblum cared for him anymore because they were losing in the playoffs every year. So Knox couldn't get them to the Super Bowl. So he walked after the 77 season. So that job was open. So as I wrote in the book, Allen and his wife Etty wanted to go back to L.A. They still had their house in Palos Verdes Estates, which they had purchased in the 60s. It was a ritzy neighborhood or suburb of Los Angeles. They still had that house. They wanted to go back there, and that is a major reason why Allen never signed that contract extension with the Redskins. Now, over the years, that has been called a firing. I don't think that is the right way to characterize that whole sequence. Williams had offered him a contract extension. Allen just never signed it. So Williams finally said, I've given him unlimited patience, and he's exhausted it. It's kind of a play on words of what Williams said in 71. So Williams just said, that's enough. You know, no longer am I offering you this extension. It's over with. We're going to look for another coach. So, and that's when they hired Pardee. But Allen, at the same time, I mean, he was out of work for a few days, but that's when Rosenblum hired him as the Rams coach.
So what you're saying is that he entered that season perhaps knowing that it would be his last season and that they wanted to go back to L.A. if the opportunity. But you also mentioned the stock option opportunity. What if Edward Bennett Williams had given him the stock option for equity?
I would think he likely would have stayed in Washington.
Okay.
Because the franchises were much more lucrative at the time. I mean, it was much different than 1971.
Sure.
The league was signing major contracts with the TV networks.
Right.
It wasn't like it is today, but it was still a lot of money back then. So the Redskins franchise would have been worth a lot more than if Allen had bought into it in 71. That 5% stock option, I mean, he would have had a tremendous return because of the Redskins' value at the time.
Yeah.
But Allen never included the stock option. And Allen really no longer had Jack Kent Cook's ear at that time either. I spoke to Bruce about this because I don't think Cook wanted him to have the stock option either. And by the way, that was the same stock option that Vince Lombardi had in 69.
I mean, do you know what it was for? Like what percentage of the team it was for?
Yeah, it was 5%.
5% of the team. Wow.
5% of the team, which still would have been a lot of money.
Oh, my God, yeah.
The return on that.
Yeah.
So, but Williams never included the stock option in the contract extension, and Allen just said, the hell with it, we're going to L.A. Allen had decided that before the 77 season. He decided it after 77. When Knox left the Rams coaching job, and when he took the Bills job, that's when that job was open. So, I mean, everything was like, everything was coming together at the same time. It was a confluence of a number of different circumstances.
So why didn't, I mean, he got hired by Carol Rosenblum to return to L.A., and then, like, it never made it through preseason, right?
Rosenblum fired him after two preseason games.
Okay.
There were players from the very beginning, such as Isaiah Robertson.
Yeah.
He was the most outspoken, but Pat Hayden didn't want him either. And neither did Fred Dreyer. Fred Dreyer, he was a really good Rams defensive end at the time, later the actor. He wanted Coryell to coach that Rams team because they have the defense. They had some really good players. They had Youngblood. They had Jack Hacksaw Reynolds, Isaiah Robertson. So they had a very good Rams defense, but on offense, under Knox, they were a very, very conservative offense. They were like a 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense.
Right. Yeah.
So Dreyer approached Rosenblum and said, listen, you sign Coryell and we'll score 50 points a game. We'll win a Super Bowl. All you need to do is sign on Coryell. And Coryell had been Dreyer's coach at San Diego State. So not only did he know of him from Coryell's feats with the Cardinals, but he knew what he could do at the college level. So Dreyer wanted Rosenblum to hire Coryell. The Rams would have had to relinquish a first-round draft pick to get him. Okay? Rosenblum didn't want to do it. So instead they hired Allen, which, on paper was kind of a strange hiring because Allen was a defensive-minded coach too.
Right.
But Rosenblum wanted Allen's game plan for beating the Cowboys, who the Rams were losing to in the playoffs year after year.
Right. Yeah.
So they were also losing to the Vikings.
And the Vikings too. So Coryell goes to the Chargers at that point, right? When Allen comes back to the Rams, and that starts his run with the Chargers, which ironically is where Gibbs ends up. And then, Pardee replaces, Allen in D.C., his, former middle linebacker. So the players revolted, and so Rosenblum fires Allen, and that's it? Did he have to pay him?
He paid him the rest of his contract. But, yeah, there was a revolt among the players. It wasn't only the revolt that started at the beginning, but it really simmered in training camp. I mean, these players were so angry at Allen's long practices, and you got to think, I mean, the players were gaining more power at the time. They didn't have the power that they have today. They didn't have, you know, free agency didn't exist like it does today. But they were gaining more power. It wasn't like the 60s. Allen was holding these three-hour practices in the Southern California heat over the summer. The players didn't like it. Allen also had this no-water policy.
That's crazy.
That was actually dangerous.
Yeah, of course.
So that was crazy.
Yeah.
He was not the only coach that did that.
No, I mean, they were giving players salt tablets. Think about how nuts that is.
Right. Yeah. I referred to that. But back in the 60s, Allen could get away with that. He could not get away with it.
Yeah.
At the time, the team doctor approached Allen saying, listen, you can't do this. I mean, players are going to, you know, get heat stroke or whatever. So they lost their first two exhibition games. The offense was basically non-existent in both games. And so Rosenblum and his son Steve approached him after the second exhibition game and fired him. One interesting anecdote that I wrote about is a story that Dreyer told me about after the first exhibition game. Dreyer said that Allen called him and Youngblood into the end zone after one of the practices, and Allen said, listen, hey guys, you know, I've just traded Isaiah Robertson to the Packers. And Dreyer and Youngblood looked at each other and they said, can he do that? Allen did not have the authority to make trades like that, okay? But in the end, no trade was consummated. Word probably got back to the Rams front office that Allen had contacted them. And so there was no trade. But that was something else that, if true, I think led to Allen's firing. Now, a reporter for one of the Southern California newspapers at the time, Doug Krikorian, told me that story was not true. He said, maybe I have dementia today, but I don't remember that story happening. I mean, I wrote seven stories about that team every week. But that is a story that Brett Dreyer told me. He said, Allen said, I have just traded Isaiah Robertson to the Packers.
I'll tell you what, there's so many stories about him. I mean, he kicked up a lot of dust, you know, as he went through all these places. And he was a character. This is awesome. Just, you know, I mean, I could go on forever. I've already taken up way too much of your time. But overall, like, what, you know, we didn't talk about, you know, him with, you know, hiring of Marv Levy and creating a special teams coach for the first time in NFL history. What is his legacy? Is it more as – was he a true innovator in the sport?
He was an absolute innovator, and he introduced schemes on defense, and he made special teams special. I mean, he introduced the nickel and dime pass coverages on defense. He had these creative blitz packages that other coaches hadn't seen before. And on special teams, he wasn't the first coach to hire a special teams coach, by the way. He hired Vermeil in 69, the same year that the Eagles hired Levy.
Got it.
As their special teams
coach.
But he took special teams to another level. Previously, it was kind of like special teams was this aspect of the game that, you know, coaches would say, hey, run on the field, let's get this over with. But Allen really, you know, he added a special touch to that phase of the game. Case in point, that block punt that he had in the 67 win over the Packers, that late season win, that eventually played a major role in that Rams team getting into the playoffs. I mean, he put so much emphasis on special teams. And even in 76 when they got into the playoffs,
Malinchek.
He called Bill Malinchek.
Yeah.
Right, he called him up. Malinchek was a commodities broker on Wall Street, and he was retired as an NFL player at the time. So Allen said to him, listen, I want you to come back in. You're going to play like the last three games of the year for us, and you're going to do something special. So sure enough, Malinchek blocked Danny White's punt in that season-ending game against the Cowboys, the game that got the Redskins into the playoffs as a wild card
right.
game that year.
Yeah. Yeah, with, you know, and in the season finale, and then they got absolutely blown out by the Vikings in the postseason. This was awesome. I'm really happy for you. I wish you the best of luck with the book. George Allen, A Football Life. Get it wherever you get a book, you know, get it at Amazon. I'm looking at it right now. It's Mike Richmond, and if you're, you know, of a certain age, and that's your first teams that you remember like they are for me, I bet you it's incredible. I mean, we didn't even get into USFL or Long Beach State or, you know, any of the rest of his life, but I'm sure it's a phenomenal book. Congrats and best of luck, Mike.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I really, really enjoyed the discussion. Loved your questions. And like I said, I knew you and I were going to have a blast in this conversation.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Thank you very much. You take care as well.
I enjoyed that with Mike. I hope you did as well. Again, the book, George Allen, A Football Life, and you can get a signed copy at MikeRichmondJournalist.com. All right, back on Monday.